music can be like that too. I don't want to send this email. I don't want to, you know, do this extra take. Yeah, because I think it's so easy too as a musician to just settle for mediocrity. To be like, yeah, it's good enough.
Yeah, actually, that's the most dangerous thing is mediocrity. Especially now, like, there's more and more and more songs and information being put out into the world. The crazy thing is that if it's just okay, no one's ever going to hear it. No one's going to care about it. It's so important to just, like, it's got to be, oh my God, this is amazing, or wow, this is suck. This is terrible. Because if you can elicit some kind of strong reaction, somebody somewhere is going to feel it.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the McCullough Mindset Podcast. Today, we're sitting down with my guy, James Brian McCullum. He's worked with Drake, Nelly Furtado. He's worked with Shawn Mendes, played some of the biggest stadiums around. He's got some Juno Awards. Shouts out to Canada. Anyway, let's get to our conversation of how he built this incredible career. And as always, if you like what you're hearing, hit like, hit subscribe, leave a comment, let me know what you think. Let's get to it. Yeah. James Brian, welcome to
Kevin
McCullough. Welcome to the McCullough Mindset Podcast, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks so much for having me.
For sure. Oh yeah, play that.
Groove. Still one of my favorite grooves I've ever written.
Man, how long have you been playing guitar?
Way too long. I started when I was 9, and I didn't really put it down like from that moment for a while. Definitely all my teen years, I was just like, that's where I was in my room, just jamming, learning.
That was like your PlayStation?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at that time, we didn't have PlayStation, right? So, but there was like, that was my Pac-Man or whatever it was.
Right? You was on Atari.
Atari, Nintendo, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I get that. Not when I was young. I didn't pick up keys until kind of later. But when I did pick it up, it was one of those kind of things where it's like, I can't really put it down.
Exactly. So wait a minute. Before that, were you playing? You were on PlayStation.
Yeah, you know, well, I was on Sega. And I was a gamer. I was definitely okay. A gamer kid. But that's like what happens, I think, when you're an only child. Like,
yeah, you got time.
So. Yeah, because like, I'm adopted, so being in my adopted scenario, I was an only child. I have a brother, and I was an open adoption, so we know each other. We're tight.
Oh,
but
nice.
I grew up, you know, primarily an only child. So I think when you're just, like, rocking out alone, especially in, like, the early 90s, it was, like, video games came out. Yeah, that was a thing. That was a thing.
I don't know about you, but for me, music... Well, I was music, right? Like, I have two sisters, but I grew up kind of like on the edge of a small town, like border of country. And I was definitely, I wasn't super social. It was like one guy, my neighbor was my best friend. And then until we got into fights, and then he wasn't. So for me, like, music was always that, like, escape for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think honestly, I feel like that's a really good terminology for it. Is like it certainly helped me to escape and explore, even.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Like a real exploration.
I hear that. It's alternate universe for me. It's like, one that everyone understands.
So, did you just, when you started playing, were you just kind of like noodling and, or did you take lessons?
I always did both, right? So I always learned, I was always picking up stuff by ear since I was like, like a toddler. Like my parents didn't really play too much. Like my dad played a little guitar, but they always had instruments around and they always played music. So there's piano, so I was always hitting stuff and learning by ear first. And then when I was 9, like I said, so I started taking lessons. And so for me, it's always about both paths. It's like, okay, learning classical music, learning jazz, learning the theory behind it, and then just like hearing it and learning that way and picking up solos and jamming in bands. So.
Word. So like, did you study music in school?
Yeah, I always, totally. I was band geek, music geek. So I was like, where I grew up, pretty small town, but I went to definitely the best music school in high school, well known for like musicals, musical theater, and the band. So I was like playing saxophone. I like played in the pit band for the orchestra. So you learned reading music and all that, the jazz band, all that stuff. Yeah.
Word. So that brings me to like kind of my first question, which is like, how valuable of an asset has that been to you, like being a session musician, like in the work that you've done as a session musician? How important is that, or how much of an asset is that?
You talk about having formal training, like being able to read music versus doing it by ear. Yeah. For me, it's just like, well, music is a language. And so however you get to it, it doesn't matter. Like I find for me, learning, if you had to pick one, by ear is the more important one, because, you know, it's more feel and, you know, it's kind of a direct link and not so in your head. But it definitely is nice to be able to speak all the dialects. So if I'm talking, you know, if I've got someone put the chart in front of me, I don't get freaked out. I can read that. If I have to write a chart, I could do that for other musicians. So yeah, so as a session player, it's come in handy. But to be honest, most of my career has been in like pop music, and mostly that's just doing it by ear. So it's all kind of my foundation, right? So it's like my, you know, do my crunches and my workout before I show up, and then I can play the game, right? So when I'm in the room, I can really react quickly, and to whoever I'm dealing with, if they are coming from that world, I can speak that language. If they're coming from, you know, not without the classical training, it's not a problem.
I also feel the subtlety of sometimes when people say it's not what you know, it's who you know. It's coming from the perspective of, you know, someone that can do something for you, instead of the perspective of, when you get to know someone that may be valuable to you, they also get to know you, and you can be valuable to them. And so exactly, when you're thinking of it as like, I add value to whoever I am connected with, it's not what you know, it's who you know. It's like, you're right, and you need to know me. Yeah. Right. It's funny because like over the last like 2 years, the people that I'm connected to in Canada has like tripled, and that was because I didn't know anybody in Canada.
Songwriting Academy. That's thanks to
Mark. Yeah, like yo, what is going on with, what's up with Canada? Because Canada seems to be like just growing crazy, expanding. It's like, it's really dope. I mean, this company, you know, this podcast, right? It's sponsored by Joyburst. It's sponsored by Joyburst and the Joyburst Talent Search. And, you know, just to make mention of it, the Joyburst Talent Search is a talent competition where you enter it. The rules have actually expanded so more people can enter, because this is all about sharing joy. So if you're a musician, instrumentalist, whatever, anything, if you go on to TikTok or go on to Instagram and you make a post and you just hashtag Joyburst Talent Search and you share like you singing, playing, just something that gives you joy, you hashtag Joyburst Talent Search, it qualifies you to enter in to a $10,000 cash prize opportunity, and like then some extra stuff after that too, potential publishing deal. Like there's really neat stuff attached to this.
And the circle is that this is a Canadian company.
Exactly. And the company's out of Canada. And I'm like, this is cool. So it's owned by Brad Woodgate. And he also owns like the No Sugar company. Are you familiar with that company at all?
I'm not, because I'm still a sugar addict. So I'm not even.
Yo, this is crazy because you look jacked. Like, I'm like, yo, you must be. James is out here lifting weights all day. It's like I see your traps through you.
I do. Like, that's right. I do yoga. I do power yoga, man. And I cycle.
What? So, power yoga, I need to get into that.
You do. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying to look like you when I grow up.
I love it. Well, you know what? Whether you're gonna look better than me for sure, but if you get into some yoga now, I started when I was maybe I've been doing it almost 20 years now. So yeah, but that is like, you know, there's certain things in my daily routine that just help make life better. And for sure, like, you know, finding whatever it is that whatever form of exercise and spiritual exercise, and, you know, I put that all together. Yoga puts that all together. So, get on the power yoga, man.
I got to ask, I got to bring it up because someone's going to want to know.
Yeah.
How did the Drake opportunity come in? And what was that like?
Yes, thank you for asking.
Is that a Toronto thing? Is that a Canada thing?
Well, you know what? There's no one more Canada than Drake, right? And also no more Universal, which is amazing. Can I tell you that it just, the whole way that happened just kind of summarizes everything we've been talking about, which is, you know, preparing for a moment, right? That's all the years of all the skills you develop. And then the relationships, building relationships so that the moment can happen. So that's how that happened. So like 20 years ago, I was working with this Canadian artist named Divine Brown. Check out, we wrote a song together called Old School Love, and I produced it and became number one. It was awesome. But on that session, the assistant in the studio was a guy named Noah Shabib, and who ended up being Noah 40 Shabib, who's like Drake's main producer and right hand man, and started sounding OBO. Anyway, so he was just getting his start on that particular session. He knew, but the way I handle myself in the session, asking about him, what are you into? And just, you know, treating him with respect. He remembered. And he remembered that being a really good session. And maybe perhaps the way he saw me interacting with the singer and whatever, the vibe was good. It was just a good day, good couple of days. So that's how we connected. However, that's where the seed was planted. But then, you know, I left Canada right about the time that he and Drake, well, actually, so let me just also say, at that day when I asked him, what are you up to? Because no one asks the assistant engineer what they're up to. Usually they're just like, oh, get me a coffee. Maybe right. They'll say, please, right? If they're respectful.
Right.
Right. But I was like, yeah, what's up? You know, what are you doing? What are you up to? What are you into? I mean, he was already, and he said, oh, I'm working with this rapper. You got to check him out. He's amazing. I'm like, oh, what's his name? It's like Drake. I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. Send me a tape or something. And I don't think he ever did. Like, he was, whatever, they're doing their thing already. But I left Canada right when he blew up. I went to London to make music for like 5 years, dragged my family to UK. When he blew up, I was like, how am I going to get back in touch with him? I love what Drake's doing. I don't see myself in everything he does, but in all those love songs and the more melodic stuff, mm-hmm. And then when I heard he was a fan of Sade, I was like, oh, Sade is like my favorite artist. I'm like, okay, we got something in common. We got some common ground,
yeah. Some
synergy somehow. But I didn't know how it was going to happen. So when I came back to Canada, like 2013, I tried maybe reaching out at some point. I didn't have a contact, maybe I reached out online, didn't hear anything. So I let it go. And then two years ago, I'd been putting out little guitar videos on my Instagram. And one day I got a DM from 40 about it. He's like, oh, I love that, man. Awesome. You could, you know, great to see you playing. You got to come by the studio. And I was like, that's what I was waiting for. Just like, yes.
Right.
Okay. So it was really just thanks to me, again, just reminding him just by doing something totally kind of unrelated. Like I was doing some cover. Maybe it was like a jazzy song. Maybe it was like Bob Marley, whatever it was. But he was like my playing. It triggered the memory for him. So I came to the studio and it was actually, no, we made plans to go to the studio. Then COVID hit. And so we couldn't do it right away. So, and the lockdowns where I live, that's in Ontario, it's part of Canada, where like some of the most longest and severe lockdowns. Like we were locked down like on a 5 times or something, felt like. So after a whole year, when the summer, it opened up a bit. So I reached out like pretty immediately. So again, that's another thing, is like follow up, right? Like I didn't just let it go. It's like, I remember I was thinking, he was in my mind. And I was, oh yeah. And in particular, I'm really dragging the story out, but there's lots of little lessons here. Okay. So in particular, so if something comes to my mind now, like at my age, I realize, okay, if I'm thinking this hard about somebody, there's a good chance that energy, they might, maybe they're talking about me or thinking about me too. So I react quickly. So right. That's a lesson I learned. And I really do believe it. So
yeah,
I,
it's a Wi-Fi signal.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's all signals, energy. So I reached out to him and he's like, dude, well, I was like, oh, can I come to the studio now? It's like, dude, I was just about to call you. Yeah, we're just finishing this Drake album. You got to come by, you know, some stuff. Why don't you, maybe you can get on. And there's this, you know, there's another artist. There's a possibility of doing a track with. So anyway, I went over there immediately and I played on a bunch of Drake songs that were already kind of almost done. And it was for his album, Certified Lover Boy. So that was the album. So when we connected, that was the album that was coming out. I played on a bunch of stuff. And you know what? In that camp, they're very hush-hush until you don't find out about anything until it happens.
Just cause it's already it's out.
Lots of people out. Are. Right. Yeah. So I actually had to wait till I waited till the date came out. Then I was like, okay, no one called me. So it's probably not a good sign, but I'll take a listen anyway. Listen through everything. I was like, no, I don't hear my guitars anyway. Okay, I'll let that go. Turns out, yeah, nothing from that session happened. But it opened the door. So he wanted me back. And there's a artist that they just signed who's now just starting to come out this year, the first female artist on OVO called Naomi Sharon. Really cool artist. Has an element of Sade and what she's doing. But he was coming to town and he wanted someone that knows that world to work with her and would come up with songs. So I got in the studio. We wrote like a bunch of great songs. Many of hopefully will be coming out this year. And so that was like 6 months after we first met. Then, you know, I was thinking, oh, maybe this is going to come out now. All of a sudden, crickets, nothing happened. And then a couple of months go by and like reach out occasionally, hey, what's happening? And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, so I've been distracted because Drake's working on this new project. It's like kind of a left turn for him to dance more house music. I'm like, oh, awesome. He's like, I'm working with, actually getting some ideas together with Black Coffee, another great South African producer who's worked on some of Drake's tracks that I love, like Passion Fruit and, you know, another one with Georgia Smith. So anyway, he's like, oh yeah, why don't you send me some ideas? So I just started, I put my guitar player hat on there and started sending guitar tracks to him. We went back and forth online and then the three of us, and then when we liked something, we sent it to Drake. So I sent a bunch of ideas, and that happened to be one idea he loved and put a great top line on, and that was Overdrive, and that ended up on the album. So that's how it happened. So it was a long and winding
road. It was a
road.
Process.
Okay?
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have happened.
It was the music business.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's never a straight line. You never know how something's going to happen, but if... Like I said, I always had that goal. Like I was like, how can I connect with them? What? How's that going to happen? And it really came back to my relationship with this producer, Noah. So anyway,
that is dope. No, it's a dope story. And it's also great for, I think for anybody listening too, to understand that, to literally use the same words that you just used, that it's not a straight line.
Yeah.
And even if you have had deals and publishing deals and you've worked with other artists and you've, you know, gotten cuts that have charted and you can do all of that stuff and it can still be
because when you get to that level, I mean, everyone in the world is trying to get a song with Drake, right? So so it's not such an easy path to get in there. But again, it was not going to happen no matter how talented I was, or even if I had a song which was, I'm sure it was a number one hit, if it weren't for the relationship I already had with 40, I wouldn't even have anyone's attention, right?
So, right. And if it wasn't for the character that you have as a human, you wouldn't have even had that, you wouldn't have had that connection to have that relationship.
Exactly, with him, because again, I think once you get to a certain point too, I think it's you it becomes even more important. I remember him talking about this, how if they do, you can see keep quite a tight circle, and trust is really important in their world and like their crew. So when you have everyone trying to get your attention, yeah, it's, you know, you're even more protective and just, you know, anyway. Yeah.
Bro.
It comes back to who do you want to be? Who do you want to hang out with today? Who do you want to make a song with today? So.
Well, I'm glad that you wanted to hang out with me today.
Hell yeah. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's always good when we get to like chat and catch up. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll be able to facilitate something where we get to work together.
Yeah, you know, let's make it happen.
Yeah. I'm trying to write the next like theme song to the next big show on TV.
I need to get on a theme song. That's in my list of things to do. Yeah.
I want to write a theme song.
So do I. Actually, that's been a goal for a long time. So let's make that happen. You guys heard it here first.
Facts. Yeah, James, thank you so much. But you know what? Right before we go, are there any other projects that you're working on? Do you got any personal projects, anything that you're putting out that, you know, we can point somebody to?
Well, definitely find out what I'm up to on socials. Instagram is probably the best place, at James Bryan Music, Bryan with a Y, Bryan Music. Because I mean, besides, most of what I spend my time is working with great artists. And so I do have stuff coming in the pipeline. You can never talk about it until you know what's happening. But at the same time, I'm always doing my own thing. I just put out my own album that I wrote during the pandemic called We Rise, which is a bunch of duets with other singers and instrumentalists from all over the world. And we wrote online during the pandemic. And like that process was new for me. And that album would never happen if I didn't go through this crazy thing. So yeah, I'd love for you to check that out too.
Word. Well, all of his information will be in the show notes below. You'll be linked. And James, again, thank you so much for taking the time out to chat with me.
Yeah.
I appreciate you being on the podcast. And you gotta grab some Joy Burst. It's fire, okay. Especially because it should fit with your diet in the powerful yoga.
That's right.
All right, man.
Have a great day, man.